And thank you very much for inviting me. As you said, I do feel something special with the OU. We just came back from New York, the OU Women's Initiative. It's something new. They invited me there, and we were there now in the Shabbat Shuvah, now me and my husband. And it was really to see. I thought, I mean, a few months ago, I still thought the OU is only the sign you see when it comes to kashrus. That's the OU. You just look it up, and then I discovered all the empire, all the communities, all the things they're doing there and here. And then something interesting happened. I work for years in the Israeli media, in Galei Tzahal, Yediot Acharonot, Channel 2. But suddenly, I discovered where the real rating is. And it started when Phil, the editor, started to print my materials in the Torah tidbits. Then all the feedback, I can't really believe. Now I understand what people are really, what they really read. So, anyway, I want to thank you for inviting me to talk about the month of Cheshvan, because we all thought about Elul and we all thought about Tishrei. I guess we had a lot of opportunities to think about Elul and to think about Tishrei. But when do you sit and think about Cheshvan? Here, today, this morning. And I want to thank you for the chance to sit and think about this special month. It is a special month. And I found there are a few words in Hebrew I really like. But by the way, what's better, my English or your Hebrew? I mean, do you want to switch? Or no? Are you sure? Because we can do it in Ifrit. No problem. Okay. So anyway, there's a special verse I really, really like. Hanavi Zechariah, the prophet Zechariah, is saying, "Mi vaz leyom ktanot, mi baz leyom ktanot." Who despises a small day? Who treats a day of small things and then underestimates small days? And I think this is maybe the right verse of Cheshvan. Mi baz leyom ktanot. How dare you treat small days, small months, like it's nothing. It was nothing when you compare it to Tishrei and Elul. And today we will speak about Cheshvan. And I think my personal story, and I will start with my personal story. I see you all look at all the sources, and we will get there. But I will start with my personal story, because I think the headline of my story is also Mi Baz Leyom Ktanot. And I was brought up here in Herzliya, near Tel Aviv. And since the age of six, I started working as a journalist at the age of six. It sounds weird. Yeah, I know it sounds weird. Six and a half maybe. It was first grade, Kita Aleph. The teacher Ricky taught us to read and to write Lashon HaKodesh Aleph Bet, and we learned how to read and how to write. And for me, it wasn't just the materials what you learn in school. For me, it was like a magic. It was a new tool in my life, because I discovered you can read and people will write things and people will read it afterwards, and you can edit it, and you could spread around like things that you want to say, messages you have. It was really like a magic. I remember how it started. There was this girl sitting next to me. Her name was Karen. And we were sitting, I was sitting here. She was sitting here. There was a line, like a border, do you still do it? Did you do it when you went to elementary school, when you draw like a line, it's like a border. That's my half and that's your half. And I was sitting here and Karen was sitting there. And it was a boring lesson. And I sent her a note. Now, I will now describe it just a few minutes. But this event is going to change my life. I sent her a note, and the question was, is it true you have a new dog? You like adopted a dog? Because I've heard a rumor they adopted a new dog. And she got she read the note and she wrote back, yes. Now there's a potential here to ask another question. And then I wrote, what's the name of the dog? And she wrote, Rexy. And I said, wow, what's the color of the dog? And she wrote, brown. And what's the type of the dog? And et cetera, et cetera. I was practically then doing like the first interview in my life without even knowing what is an interview. I mean, when you're on first grade, you don't know what's an interview. But I was interviewing Karen, and I had like a mountain of notes with all the important questions about the dog. When do you wake up? When you take him out for a walk? And she said, no. Me and my brother, we promised my mom and that we will wake up early every day before we go to school. So I said, wow, what time is it? And she wrote, no, after 2 days, we decided we're too tired for that and mom is taking him. Anyway, that was the fascinating exclusive interview about Rexy. And I took all these notes back home and I like edited like a question, Q&A, you know, question and answer, and I arranged everything and I sent it to a kids magazine, a very popular kids magazine then in the 90s, and it was published. After 2 weeks, it was published, like a two-page, what we call a double spread. We call it in the when in, you know, journalists, we call it double spread, and it's a Karen and the dog. Everything you want to know about Rexy, and the writer is Sivan Rav Meir, 6 and a half from Herzliya. And that was the beginning of my career. Now I'm 37, and that's what I'm doing for like 30 years, interviewing people. Maybe it can get, you know, more serious people or more subjects that are more serious. I had to interview someone about Kaya. You know who's Kaya? That's the Prime Minister's dog of blessed memory. Yeah, she already. Yeah, sorry. She's not with us anymore, yeah. But Kaya, she lives here in Balfour Street. So I really felt like for 30 years, it's from Rexy to Kaya. That's my career. But there were other things, you know, in the middle, other important things. So that's what I'm doing since the age of 6 or 7. I discovered like a hobby, and this is what I'm doing since then. Interviewing everybody around me, hearing their stories and their personal, like, hobbies or attitudes towards life. And I just collect all these ideas and publish them. It can be in this kids magazine, and then I started working for the Israeli TV, and then the cables came to Israel, and Channel 2 was like opened, and I became this girl from the TV, the girl you see every day interviewing people. And it was very like nice to take a small girl and let her speak to important people. And I discovered that it wasn't my hobby, because school became the hobby, and that was the main thing I was doing. And I was like, I remember the principal once called me because I wasn't at school like 3 times, I think in 2 weeks, I wasn't there. The first time, and it was a very important reason, they called us like a bunch of kids to interview the Prime Minister, Yitzhak Rabin, of blessed memory, to interview him. And then after a few days again, we were all there in the studio to interview the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Shimon Peres, of blessed memory. And then 3-4 days later, again, I was called as a girl, as a young girl, to interview the Power Rangers. They came to Israel. I don't know if the of blessed memory, because I don't know what's going on with them today. I don't follow anymore. But this was, so you understand, I wasn't at school. I was there all day. Now, it's very nice, it's very funny, but I want to add another element into this story, another fact. I was brought up here until I was, I think, until the age of 14, 15, I never met a religious Jew. It's possible to live in Israel, not in, I don't know where, in Kathmandu, here, in Israel, in Herzliya, in the 90s, without knowing anyone who's, when I say religious, I mean everything. Frum, you know, Hasidish, Yeshivish, knitted kippah, black kippah, I don't know, all these, in Hebrew, there are these words, Chardal, light, Karlibach, Shas, Breslev, nothing, nobody, until I was 15. Now, that's crazy, but it's a sad fact. It's a very sad fact. When you look at Israel's society, it's possible, and unfortunately. So what happened? Okay, so I was a journalist. I think I could continue forever interviewing the whole world. So what happened? My mom, when people ask my mom, how did your girl became Bala Tshuva? What happened? So my mother, she laughs, she smiles, and she says, listen, she just finished interviewing all the secular people. Now, it's true. It's true. I really interviewed everybody, the principal, all the managers, the teachers, the kids, the cleaner, everybody at school got their exclusive interview. I really knew all, like, my neighborhood, my city, and I really started to get to know, to be familiar with other concepts outside of my bubble. And I met kids unlike me. I was in the left wing. These were the Oslo days, and we all believe the peace is just here and it's gonna be here every minute. So the Oslo agreements were like a big hope. And then I first met kids, teenagers from the right wing. They convinced me that there's something, they're saying rational things. And then I met for the first time kids that were new immigrants from Russia, from Ethiopia. I came in order to interview them, but I learned a lot from them. And then I went to kibbutzim and moshavim, all kinds of settlements, itnachaluyot in Judah and Samaria. And I met all kinds of kids, poor kids, very rich kids in the north, in the everywhere in Israel. It became like it was a show for kids, and I was interviewing kids from all over the country. And this was, for me, a very meaningful journey, because at the age of 15 or 16, I understood there's a bigger story here. It's not my private hobby to interview kids in my neighborhood. We have a broader, like something bigger than me here, and there's a big story here going on. It is called Shivat Zion, okay? The Jewish people are coming back here, and it's fascinating to see all the styles of Jews that live here. I never met them. So at first I understood there's something bigger, but what really changed me? Then I met, this is Mi Baz LeYom Ktanot, who despised the day of small things. I met a few teenagers from the city of Be'er Sheva in the south, and they invited me to see Shabbos for the first time. I was 15, and they all invited me. They were my age. You know, I interviewed them, I met them, we became like friends, and they said, you must come for Shabbos in Be'er Sheva. And I came there. And I understood Shabbos is not a concept only. It's not a local concept of Be'er Sheva. It happens in the whole world. But for me, Shabbos was Be'er Sheva at first. So I came there, and it was really, really touching. I mean, very exciting to see. I was already a workaholic at the age of 15. So, you know, to turn off the phone and to not do something and create something new for 24, 25 hours, it was fascinating. And I saw all the customs, all the minagim, all the new halachot, all the, Shalom Aleichem, and Eshet Chayil, and with the challah, and everything, the singing, and the, when you sit, like, all the family sits together, and that's the center of the attention. I mean, that's the event. It's not like you eat and you go out. You eat and you go to watch TV. You eat and you have an event here. Something is happening here together, because we're concentrated here. So it was all very nice, but when I went back home, it didn't change my personal Shabbos, okay? I kept on interviewing people and writing and typing, and after a few times, I mean, I was there, it was very nice. I mean, their Shabbos was very, very nice. It's good to know that it exists. But what really changed me, I don't remember the name of the parasha, it was Shabbos morning meal. They all sat in the family name was Amar, the Amar family. They all sat around the Shabbos table, and they were eating. And then my friend, she was like 15, okay, the girl that invited me. But her small sister, I think she was 9 or 10, she was like running from the door, the entrance door, to the table. And she was saying, I think I did a fadicha. Now, do you know what is a fadicha, right? As I said, I guess your Hebrew is great. What is a fadicha? Who wants to translate the word fadicha? Mess up. Good. Mess up. Yeah. Something like embarrassing you did. A small, tiny, not a tragedy. Small, tiny thing you did. It is, you did something wrong. So she came and said, I think I did a fadicha. And the whole family was like, okay, what's the fadicha? What did you do? And she said, the neighbor just knocked on the door. The neighbor, she is a new immigrant from Russia, and she's not religious at all. She knocked and she asked for a cup of sugar. And I gave her a cup of sugar. Is it okay what I did? Now, here in Israel, you already know it's very common. You knock on your neighbor's door when you need something. Do you use it here? You know it's popular, right? I don't know if you do it in the States, but here you do it a lot. So she gave her the sugar. Now she's asking us, is it a fadicha? Was it wrong to give her the sugar? Now, what do you think? No, what is she doing now? The whole, it became like a discussion, okay? Like, what is she doing now with the, let's think of it. What is she doing? She's going to bake, exactly. She's baking now with this sugar a cake. Now, because of you, now it's in the oven, and now she's like doing everything. It's all avarious. You're not supposed to do it on Shabbos. And now she's doing it because you gave her what she needed for this baking mission. So it's your fault. Yeah. So one of the old brothers said exactly what we're suggesting here. But then someone else said, let's like a kafschus, let's see it differently. What else, what can she do with the sugar? Other options? Exactly. Tea, a lot of tea. Yeah. There are 10 guests from Moscow. They came now and they want their Russian tea, very, very sweet. And she's giving them a 4 teaspoon of with a lot of sugar. And she needs all this amount of sugar now, here and now. It's achnasat orchim. It's good. What she's doing is a mitzvah, and it's good you gave her the sugar. Exactly. And then someone else said, you know, in Hebrew, sugar is sukkar, and you know the name of the disease, sukkeret, right? Diabetes. Maybe she needs it urgently. It's something this. No. And then another one said, think of it. Maybe if she wants to really, she really wants to bake the cake, but you are not giving her the sugar, so what else can she do in Israel? Exactly. She will drive and park and choose something and go and pay and drive again. You saved her. You must give her the sugar. And they went on and on with this creative discussion. And I was sitting here, and I was like this. These people are crazy. No, they're really crazy. It's impossible. They're really discussing this issue. It's like pro and cons. We're talking about sugar. I mean, what's going on here? What do you do? And I said to myself, okay, I want to go home. These people are so extreme, and they're so crazy, and it's not relevant to our daily life. Why does it matter? I mean, if it's Monday, do you discuss it on Monday? Should you give her the sugar? So what's going on? It's not you. It's her. It's not you. It's the sugar. I mean, it's not. What do you do? It's not like she's forcing you to bake. So why do you care? And then I went back home. Motzei Shabbos, there's a bus from Beersheba to Herzliya, long way. And I had some time to think, to rethink about it. And then I understood that this discussion is not funny. Because Shabbos, it's not a funny thing. When I go there to Beersheba, I feel I can touch. There's a certain creation in the air. There's something there. And which is, I don't know how to call it, holiness of Shabbos, this structure of Shabbos. Now, it's not only the songs and the minagim and the shalom aleichem. It's important. But there are like thousands of years with thousands of discussions. And these roots, I mean, the Shabbos building is built, this building called Shabbos, it is built on these roots. They're very important because we treat every small detail when it comes to Shabbos. There's something bigger than us, holier than us. And this Motzei Shabbos, I remember, on my way back to Herzliya, I started to treat Shabbos as something very, very important. And I want to be a part of it. I want to be committed. I want to be more committed because I see how serious it is. Your Shabbos and the neighbor's Shabbos. It's just a cup, it's just a glass of sugar. Well, it's not important. Everything's important. Mi baz liyom ktanot. So what I learned, and I think it's an important message, especially when it comes to Cheshvan, to these boring, gray, banal, like not so days with no wow in the air, okay? No extreme thing is happening. What I learned then is that mi baz liyom ktanot, the small details are creating the bigger picture here. We're all part of this picture. And I became, I know Balei Tshuva, they sometimes have fascinating stories. This happened, that happened, and I was there, and I was here, and I saw this guy, and I met this Rav. So I was on the bus on my way from Beersheba to Herzliya thinking about sugar, okay? I think that's the most boring tshuva story you will ever hear in your whole life. But as I said, mi baz leyom ktanot, the month of Cheshvan, teaches us to treat these small things, never underestimate the small things we're doing. Who cares? God doesn't care. I don't care. Who cares? He doesn't care. We all care. So that's my personal story. That's how I became more and more like religious or frum, or how do you, orthodox, how do you want to call it. And I went on, I kept, I remained, I mean, I was working, still working in Israeli radio, TV, and newspapers, all kinds of places in the media, Israeli media. And I had to tell them I cannot work on Shabbos anymore, because unfortunately the Israeli media, most of it works 24/7. So I had to tell them, now I want to work 24/6. And it's not because I'm lazy, like they tried to claim. It's because I believe we're all supposed to work 24/6. And the seventh day will bring, like, will bless the 6 days of work. And it's okay. They had to understand. I mean, I told them they had no choice. I don't work on Shabbos anymore. There were many prime time show on Shabbos. Now, by the way, the rating is so low on Shabbos, Baruch Hashem, so it changed. But then it was like weird. Don't you want to be in the most popular show? Anyway, it was easier there than in my personal life. I had to tell all the people around me, all my friends, I cannot go out with them on Shabbos. And one event was extremely important. A friend of mine called Yoni arranged a birthday party, his birthday party, on Friday night, Lel Shabbat. And he invited me. I was already 18 or 19, and I had to tell him it's impossible, although I tried to hide it, but now I had to tell him that I will not be able to be a part of it because it's Shabbos. And he was shocked. He was very surprised. And he said, why do you do it? I mean, I thought you're normal. I mean, what's going on here? Are you so extreme? Are you so, like, with all these dark black people, primitive? Why do you do it? And I had to try to explain, and he was very mad. And then he called me again after, like, 2 days, and and he called me again, and he said, listen, I thought he was going to shout at me again, but he said, listen, I just realized I have another primitive friend, and he is also, he cannot come on Friday night. He's not willing. He tried to suggest all these solutions for me and for the other guy. He said, I can send you a taxi and you will just go, or with an Arab driver. I will, maybe bicycles, maybe all kinds of things, you know. What about V'ahavt al-Racha Kamocha? Yeah, that's the final. Okay, yeah, you convinced me. So anyway, he tried to convince me and him, and then he saw he have now two problems. And he said, I'm worried because I tried to think about it, and maybe I'm worried I will discover more of my friends are so primitive. So I decided to postpone, and it will be on Motzai Shabbat, Saturday night. The event is postponed because of you too, and I know what's going on here. So anyway, I was there, Motzai Shabbat, and Yoni was there accepting all the guests at the entrance. And when he saw me, he said, wow, here's the primitive friend. I want you to meet the other annoying guy. His name is Yedidya Meir. Come here, please. So, now, Baruch Hashem, Yedidya Meir is my husband. We have 5 kids. We live here in Jerusalem. So, I don't know if Yoni is the matchmaker, or maybe Shabbos is the matchmaker. I saw that Shabbos brings a lot of bracha into your life. It blesses your whole life if it brings good things to you. Thank you very much. So, mi baz liyom ketanot, it means that small things that you're doing can bring really big things into your life. Now, I want us to explore together, after like telling you a little bit about myself for half an hour. I want the other half to be, I want us to dedicate it to Reb Zusha of Anipoli, and because he has other messages for us, except for Mi Baz Leyom Ktanot, who despises the day of small things, and I try to elaborate and explain how much this verse is important. Now I want Reb Zusha to teach us more tools in order to really feel cheshvan, or to really take the big things from Tishrei to cheshvan. We all ask ourselves, what do we take from Tishrei to Cheshvan, and the answer is not only the weight, okay? This is one answer, but what else can we take from Tishrei to Cheshvan without forgetting these moments we all had? So basically, Reb Zusha, it's something I discovered this Tishrei. Reb Zusha was once, we're talking about something that happened 200, even 300 years ago. Reb Zusha was a part of the small group that learned from the Maggid of Mezrich. The Maggid of Mezrich, one of the founders of the Hasidut, the first generations of Hasidut. And the Maggid of Mezrich once taught all his students, it was the closed circle around him, he once taught them a very hard Torah about what is tshuva. He tried to define what is tshuva. We will not talk about his answer because it was in a very high level. It was very complicated. Reb Zusha also felt it's too complicated for him. It says that after the whole circle there was, wow, enthusiastic, wow, what a explanation about the word tshuva, Reb Zusha said, it's not for me. It's too much for me. I want to give myself, and I want to give us all, another aspect of tshuva, another way to look at this world in order to take tshuva into the boring, normal days we're all facing now in Cheshvan, in order that tshuva will not only be a part of Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah. Tshuva is a part of Cheshvan and Kislev too. It's an essential concept. It's not only there. So Reb Zusha offers us, this is his suggestion. I'm quoting from Luach HaYom Yom of Chabad. I guess some of you are familiar with it. Luach HaYom Yom gives us a daily tip. The Lubavitcher Rebbe edited it before he was the Lubavitcher Rebbe, when the Rayatz was the leader of Chabad. The Lubavitcher Rebbe edited during the 40s of the 50s, and he published it as, it's called Luach HaYom Yom, and there's a daily tip every day. So Reb Zusha, the Rebbe, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, a whole week is dedicated to Reb Zusha's messages. Because one day, they tell us about the profound answer of the Maggid of Mezrich. And then Reb Zusha is saying, it's too much for me. I want to give us all a more accessible tshuva. So what do we do during the year? How can we do tshuva during the year? And then he starts for 5 days, because why do we need 5 days? He takes the word tshuva in Hebrew, okay? And he divides us to five components, with the letters, like an acronym. And he says, tshuva, we're talking about five levels, and we will look at the letters. Each letter will send us to a special verse, and together it will combine the concept of tshuva. And we will start to do it together. Can I see the sheets that you're all holding? Do you have one for me? I will, because I want to study it together. No, but what about you? Do you have a spare one? Yeah? Okay, thank you very much. So, you can see it here. Acharei Chagim is now. Okay. So we will start with the letter. What is the first letter of the word tshuva? Taf, of course. Taf. Tamim, taf is we say taf, you will say tof, but I already understood that the main language here is not Hebrew and not English, it's Ivris, right? So, Tov means Tomim tihye im Hashem Elokecha. You must be wholehearted with the Lord your God, or you must be trust. I saw another translation: trust God your Lord with simple faith. How can you be Tomim, wholehearted with simple faith? How can you be honest? How can you be Tomim, authentic? How can you be nowadays Tomim? Tamim tihye im Hashem Elokecha. Now, Reb Zusha is telling us that the way to be tomim, that's the first level. If we want to reach tshuva, so that's the first step, okay? Tomim, tihye im Hashem Elokecha. Reb Zusha is telling us, you must look at a child, you must look at a kid when you want to see real tmimus, when you want to see real something that is really authentic. And we know it, because when kids are crying, they're really crying. And when they're laughing, they're really laughing. You know, what my kids, they once told me, now, Yehudit, she's 3 years old, and she said, why sometimes when you talk on the phone, you're not really tzocheket, you're not really laughing. It's like, ha, 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 it's true. Why do you do it? Someone's saying something. Either you laugh, or I laugh out loud, it's really funny, or you don't laugh. But what you do it out of your nicer, you're doing like, and she said, Mom, why are you doing it? You're not really laughing. And he knows you're not really laughing. It's like to be nice, to be polite, but you're laughing because of you try to be polite. It's weird. And yeah, when you're a kid, it's really weird. When you're tamim, when you're really authentic, it's weird. I just saw it a few weeks ago on Rosh Hashanah. We went to Tashlich, one of our neighbors. She has this pool in the garden, so all of the people from the neighborhood are coming to do Tashlich there. And we were there, and with all the kids, and my sister-in-law, they were with us, with all their kids, and we were all there together doing Tashlich. And then we walked back home, and again Yehudit, my girl, was fighting with Shlomo, who is my sister-in-law's son. And they were like fighting, I don't know why, and they don't remember why either. And it was something there. And then this other kid called Roni, she's like 5 or 6, she came to Yehudit and Shlomo and she said, "What are you doing? You just did Tashlich. Why are you putting mud in your pockets again?" She said, "Lama atem samim lichluch bakisim odapam? Why do you put this dirt in your pockets all over again? You just did Tashlich. I mean, you're so clean, you're so pure. Wow, that's authentic, that's Tomim. She really believes, we all did Tashlich, but she really did Tashlich. She is into it, she is here." So Tomim Tiyeh means to be more authentic and to be more like real, to really act and to really react. And after a few days, after Rosh Hashanah, I saw at work, we have WhatsApp groups. And this one WhatsApp group is of the reporters, and other WhatsApp group of the producers and the cameramen and all kinds of groups. And I saw something fascinating. At the same second, I saw this guy work, a colleague, a friend of mine, he works with me. I saw him in one group, this one of the colleagues, she told us her grandmother passed away, and he was sending 3 emojis crying. You know how they cry? They're like, oh, they're like weeping because of the grandmother. So he sent 3 crying smileys. But then in another group, someone else sent a very funny joke about, though it is a funny subject, about Yair Lapid. And this is something there. I don't know what he did again. But this joke was very funny. But the same person, the same colleague, sent 3 emojis. They were crying. Why? Because they were laughing out loud. It was hilarious. They were like, again, crying because it's so funny. Now, it happened, I saw it. It happened almost immediately. I saw it happening here and then here. And I was thinking, I know him. What is he doing right now? Is he crying because of the grandmother? Give me a break. Is he crying because of the joke about Lapid? No. He's apathetic, indifferent. It's not really, it doesn't really matter. But again, being authentic means take responsibility. When you act, when you react, do you really feel it? Tamim tiyeh im Hashem Elokecha. Be simple. It's not so simple to be simple. It's not so simple to be simple. So that's the first step. But then Reb Zusha is saying, there's shin after tof, there's shin. Shiviti Hashem lenegdi tamid. That's in Hebrew. Shiviti Hashem lenegdi tamid. That's in Hebrew. I have placed God before me. I will speak 3 languages, translation. I have placed God before me at all times. What does it mean? Shiviti Hashem lenegdi tamid. I have set the Lord always before me. Or I saw another version. I am ever mindful of the Lord's presence. Shiviti Hashem lenegdi tamid. I feel God with me all the time, and it affects the way I act. And Shiviti Hashem lenegdi tamid, I think in a way it's harder today, but in a way it's easier. I heard this idea from Harav Yaakov Ariel, the chief rav of Ramat Gan. There was a big convention, and he was the head of it in Tel Aviv. And then, where is it? And then he said something interesting. He said, I always wondered, when I reach Kriyat Shema, when I reach my Israel, how can you do it? It's impossible. Bechol levavcha, bechol nafshecha, bechol meodecha, alevavecha, shinantam levanecha, לדבר בם בשבתך בביתך בלכתך בדרך, when you walk בשוכבך, when you go to sleep, when you get up בקומך. How can you do it? And now in our generation I see it's possible to be so devoted, to be with dveikus. And he said, look at that, okay? You can be בכל לבבך, בכל נפשך, בכל מאודך, על ידיך, בין עיניך. You can do it בשוכבך when you go to sleep, and you can do it בקומך. You can do it with your kids, they see it, בניך, they see you. All the time they see you so devoted and so concentrated. And you can do, of course, בלכתך בדרך, and you bump into things because you're so into it. So it's possible. The question is, where is the devotion? What's the direction? Where you have, what are you doing with the opportunity you have to be Shiviti? What are you doing with this opportunity? And this year, we mentioned the word fadicha before. It's interesting. Now we will mention it again. This year I was asked, there was this survey at the Tishrei. They asked many journalists, what is your fadicha? What's the worst fadicha you did this year? Okay? It's very interesting. Now when you're all Israelis, you know that here we summarize the year twice a year. It's very nice. We do it in Elul, right? So we choose the politician of the year and the event of the year and the picture of the year and the singer of the year. And then we do it again in 2 months, January, December. We're doing it all over again. Again, the politician of the year and the trend of the year. So we're doing a lot of cheshbon nefesh in Israel twice a year. So one... We're in the middle now. But now I was asked, because they have to, you know, they have to fill all these programs and magazines and everything. So I was asked to one of the internet sites in Israel, who asked me, what is your fadicha this year? What's the worst fadicha you did as a journalist? And I had to think about it. And my answer was, and the answer is really, it has a lot to do with this verse of Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, I have placed God before me at all times. My answer was, my fadicha happened with Natan Sharansky. He's also a neighbor. Where is Sochnut? It's here. It's here. I don't know, but it's here. The head of the Sochnut, he just finished this job a few weeks ago. So my fadicha happened with Natan Sharansky. I interviewed him, and now on the last Independence Day, he won Israel's prize, Pras Israel. He got Israel prize. And in a very exciting ceremony at the end of Yom HaTzmaut, when they choose, this committee chooses people from all kinds of fields, and they're getting Pras Israel. And I had the chance to interview him, but he is interviewed a lot, and I don't always agree with now what he's saying now. I don't always agree about conversions and about the reforms, but I really wanted to interview Avital. His wife, exactly. Avital, that's exclusive. Avital never spoke for 30 years. Avital never spoke about this chapter in our history. And I thought maybe it's a chance to interview them both, because he will, of course, he will agree, but he will convince her, and she will give this exclusive interview after all these years. And it happened. I mean, I tried to convince her, and he tried to convince her. She's so shy, you know, he was the bad cop, I was the good cop, and together we succeeded, and she said yes. And the next day, I was in their living room I forgot the name of the neighborhood, but they live, I think, here in Emek Rephaim. And I was interviewing them with me and the cameraman, and the soundman, three of us there talking to them. And for the first time hearing this really important story that was never told in this way. Now, they're sitting together, and they start, you know, the memories were very, like, for them it was a chance to tell everything again, how she just found out that she's Jewish at the age of 15. She never knew she's a Jew, and how she discovered it, and how he discovered it again. It was like he never knew. He thought a Jew is like a curse. It's like a bad word you say, like you're saying stupid or ugly or dummy or a Jew. It's like he used like Russian curses, but when you say like bad things about someone, so a Jew is, it's another way to curse him. And he told me how he, at the age of 20, he saw a book about Jewish history. It was illegal book. It was not allowed even to read it, to hold it. Of course, it was illegal to read it. And he read it. And he said, at the beginning, when I started reading it, I knew I was 20. But when I finished reading, I understood I'm 3,000 years old. I understood, again, I'm part of something bigger than me. And they told me about all the activities, the underground activities, and the demonstrations, and the struggle, and how they met. All the dates were in like Russian police stations or something, very romantic. And how they studied Hebrew, a little bit of Hebrew, and how they got married. The first Jewish wedding they ever saw was their Jewish wedding. They never saw a Jewish wedding. They found an old Jew in the Archipova Shul in Moscow, and they asked him, can you like arrange a Jewish wedding for us? And he said, yes, I will explain you what to do while you're getting married. And they were like saying the words he told them to say, but there was one sentence they did understand and they felt it, and it is, of course, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim. That's the part they understood from their Jewish wedding. And then one day after the wedding, Avital is doing Aliyah because she gets a permission to be here. And he's saying, go, if you have a permission, run away. I will arrange some things and I will be in a few days, a few weeks, I will come. So she came here, but it didn't take a few days. It took 12 years. And they're explaining how they felt so connected when he's there and she's there. And it's very touching. Even the cameraman and the soundman are are very excited, and it's hard to make them, you know, be a part of the story. And they're telling us how they both woke up every morning, and 100% of the time was dedicated to the mutual struggle. She's out there arranging demonstrations, and she met the whole world for him. In the UN, and the President Reagan, and Mitterrand, and Chirac, all the leaders. While she's doing this, he's struggling, you know, because the sanity is you must remain normal, and you must remain sane, and you must never forget what's the mission here. Maybe she's doing something, but he's not with her anymore. And they told me, no, we felt together. Now, at the end of the interview, I asked him, why are you giving this interview? And that, so what I'm telling here is not a fadicha, right? What's the fadicha here? The fadicha is that when I asked him at the end, why are you giving this interview? He gave me a beautiful answer. And this answer was never shown to the public. I mean, it wasn't published. It wasn't screened. It wasn't part of the video. When I edited everything, I had to decide what's in and what's, you know, what's left, what do I leave and out. Out there, and I had to put other things there in the video I edited, and this beautiful answer is not there, and this is my fadicha, because after he's telling us all these heroic stories, I asked him, why are you giving this interview? And he said, because I want every Jew that is watching us, I want him to know that he's braver than me, that his struggle is harder than my struggle. And I was like, why? What are you doing? Why are you saying it? I mean, you like had like, how do you call it, hunger strikes for your tefillin. I never did something like that. It was investigated by the KGB because of my Judaism. So how come the young Jews that are watching you now, they are braver than you? And he said, and that's the Shiviti. I think that's the most important message. The heroic stories are nice, but that's the message. He said, when I was there, everything was clear. Everything was simple. I was completely right, and they were completely wrong. And nothing was complex. Nothing was like confusing me there. The minute I walked out from jail, I met a pluralistic, open, democratic, liberal world, which is good. But it's hard to remember your values when nobody's chasing you. Now, for the first time in our history, nobody's chasing us. No Stalin or Hitler or Lenin or Paro, Nebuchadnezzar, Antiochus, all these mean guys, Baruch Hashem, are not here. And he told me, I think young Jews today, not only young Jews, every Jew today, when he can choose, it's like a supermarket. Everything's accessible. You can choose. Nobody's forcing you. Now, what is your decision? What do you choose? When you look at the world Jewry, unfortunately, they choose assimilation. They're forgetting their identity. Their grandparents fought about it but nobody's chasing us now. And I think this message, where I stupidly thought the historic stories are important, this message is out. Now I try to promote and to tell it to as many people as I can. It's not the rating you have in Channel 2, but it is it's 1% maybe, I don't know how much is it. So there is writing here too. So I try to tell this story, this fadicha, because today Shiviti Hashem Lenegdi Tamid, it's even harder that in our history. And that's the message, I think, of Sharansky, and that's the message of Reb Zusha. Now we will continue and see the third letter, Vav, Ve'ahavta L'Recha Kamocha, and you shall love your fellow as yourself. This is, Reb Zusha is telling us, it's one of the hardest things to understand, that you are not the center of the world. There are other people around you. And he says, it's interesting, what is the first word we're saying every morning, the first word we have to say every morning? Mode, exactly, mode. And what is the second one? Ani. Otherwise, if there was no halakha, what was the first word we would choose? Thank you very much, ani. So halakha, the Shulchan Aruch is saying, it forces us, at least say modeh. Then you will say ani, it's okay, you will say ani for the rest of the day. But we all promote the ani. And when you put yourself here and you see there's a place for someone else, it's part of the tshuva, to be ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha. I think promoting the brand called I, again, it's extremely popular today, because we promote the brand called me all the time. Okay, we upload things, we publish things. We're part of we're promoting ourselves. And ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha means to remember there's somebody else out there. I once heard the manager of Waze, you know, the company called Waze, right? So it's an Israeli company. Again, he's from here, from Jerusalem, Noam Bardin, and he once said that the secret in every application is to make it as friendly as possible, as humane as possible. Think of Waze. You think of Waze as a friend. And he said, I think this is what we, if you want to succeed with your startup, with your application, you must make it as friendly and humane as possible. Now, I heard him, I interviewed him, and then I said, wait, what's going on here? The more you treat apps like people, the less you will treat people like people. Exactly. It's dangerous. We must talk about it. So that's ve'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Now Reb Zusha is telling us the fourth message, which is in the letter bet, which is bechol derechecha da'ehu. It's a beautiful in Hebrew, bechol derechecha da'ehu. Know him in all your ways. Now I saw the Sfat Emet, sorry, the Sfas Emes is saying, sorry, but the Sfat Emet or the Sfas Emes is saying the bechol derechecha da'ehu. It's very interesting. I just saw it a few months ago, and I think I thought, why didn't I think about it? You know, myself. Look at the verse. You all know it by heart. You said it for millions of times. Hamalach ha-goel oti mikol ra, yevarech et ha-ne'arim, v'yikarev v'hem shemi v'shem avotai Avraham v'Yitzchak, v'yidgu l'rov bekerev ha-aretz. We all know it. We all sing it. Our grandchildren and kids, and it's one of the most famous verses in the Jewish world, in the world. So the Sfas Emes is asking something very original, but very basic. What's going on here? May the angel who redeemed me from all harm bless the youths, and may they be called by my name in the name of my fathers, Avraham and Yitzchak, and may they, here, that's the question, and may they multiply abundantly like fish in the midst of the land? Land? Exactly. See, I never thought of it. What does it mean, ve'idgu l'rov bekerev ha'aretz? And they might multiply abundantly like fish in the midst of the land, but fish belong to they dry up when they have to be in the sea. So why do you say in the land? And the Sfas Emes is saying, exactly. Yaakov Avinu knows we're all going to a very long exile, a very long journey, and we will face conflicts there, a lot of conflicts. And we will feel like fish out of water, exactly. And he's telling us, remember the water. Water, it symbolizes Torah and truth, of course, our values. Remember the sea, because you're all, it doesn't matter if you're a journalist in Channel 2 or everything you're doing out there. You can feel it in Israel, of course you can feel it abroad. You are like destined to be fish in the midst of the land, and you must multiply abundantly. You must succeed in this mission until the world will be completely fixed, Okay, the Geula Shelema. Until then, you must remember it, and it will help you with Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu. It's hard, it's not easy, right? It's not a paradise. Sometimes it's a paradox. So Bechol Drachecha Da'ehu, Reb Zusha is telling us, remember, it's a conflict. It will help you if you can define the problem. It will help you reach the solution. And then the five letter, the last letter is Hey. Of course, we can elaborate a lot and explain these verses, but I want us to be familiar with it. When we go to the month of Cheshvan, just to know these tools, to get to know, to say the words, and to know these verses. So Hey means, Hatzne alechet im Elokecha, walk humbly with your God, walk discreetly with your God. Have private places in life. Privacy is a Jewish value. Since Bilam saw the tents in the desert and said, Matovu, because they live in a private way, in their families, in their private places, Hatznei Alechet means not everything you do belongs to everybody. Not everything belongs to everybody. Not everything is out there. When I was a teenager, there was a philosophical question, if a tree falls, you know, if a tree falls and nobody can hear, so I think today the philosophical question is, if two girls go to the mall and they didn't post a photo, did they really go? I'm not sure they really went there. I'm not sure. So Hatznei Alechet means sometimes you go to the mall without posting it, and you're doing private things. You have islands of privacy during the week, and of course Shabbos is the island, the day of Hatznei Alechet. Now, I want to conclude, to summarize everything that we tried to say about Cheshvan and about ourselves. My personal message was Mi Baz LeYom Ktanot, okay? To never underestimate anything you're doing, even if it's just a sugar to your neighbor, it can affect others' people's life forever. But then I want us to learn about to see what Reb Zusha is telling us, and I wish us all to take it. You know, the year just started, to take it to our daily ordinary life, to be tomim, to be shivisi Hashem lenegdi tamid, to be ve'ohavim recha kamocha. To really feel bechol drachecha da'ehu, although it is a conflict, to be aware it is a conflict, we know it, and to be hatznei alechet im elokecha. And if we do it, I'm sure we'll have a better year, and I wish us all shana tova umetuka. Toda rabah, thank you very much. Thank you.